right now. We will hand it over to all y'all out there. It is the Blue Jays Talk at 416-870-590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590 as the strains of Devo ring out to now an empty Oriole Park at Camden Yards. And I have to say, through the first 2 days of this series here in Baltimore, I have been thoroughly delighted by the musical choices that they've made here at Oriole Park in Camden Yards. Looking forward to tomorrow afternoon and more great tunage. Would be nice for some, see, and now it even gets better with Electric Avenue by Eddie Grant. It would be better if a Blue Jay win was paired with all this great music. It seems at the moment, anyway, that's a little too much to ask for. As Jerry mentioned, they're going to have to try to fight off a sweep for the second straight series. They managed to do it against the New York Yankees. But it's been no fun watching through these first 21 games of the season. The Blue Jays win only 8. The offense just really not doing anything. And that's the biggest problem. You talk about the defense all you want, but it doesn't show up nearly as much if this team is hitting the way it's capable of hitting, and it is simply not doing that right now. Again, they only scored in one inning tonight, and only 4 hits outside that 3-run six. The rally started with 2 out, back-to-back walks by Adam Lind and Jose Bautista, and then Edwin Encarnacion's 3-run homer was followed by a Melky Cabrera triple, and the momentum was starting to shift, but Brett Laurie flied out to left, a hard hit ball into the gap to a well-positioned Nate McLeod. And that was that. The Blue Jays were not heard from again. They didn't get another hit until Meister Astura's 2-out single in the 9th. We're not going to have time for a lot of Blue Jays talk across the whole country right now, but we will have more of it between 10 and 11 Eastern on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So stick with us. You can also find us on your Rogers radio app, on sportsnet590.ca, and on Rogers Digital Cable Channel 904. Let's get one caller in at least. Let's go out to Kingston. Jay listening on our flagship, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You're going to be the leadoff man on the Blue Jays talk.
Good evening, Mr. Wheeler. 2 comments. First of all, my only concern about the offense coming into this season, regardless of their record right now, because I still think it's way too early to look at that, I think this team could probably use 1, maybe 2 more on-base percentage guy. I mean, right now, Bautista coming into the game with a 361 OBP was the only guy on the roster coming into the season with an on-base percentage above 350. And I know Encarnacion and Reyes at, I think, 340-something are close, but I think insofar as on-base percentage measures the percentage at which you don't get out, I think it's quite important. And I think that's one area in which they're lacking. And if the power game goes, I think the offense becomes sort of one-dimensional. So I think that's an area that in which they could upgrade. My second comment, which is more minor, is about Casper Wells. Now, guys like Wells, who have extreme splits and hit lefties really well, are a dime a dozen. But I think this team could probably use a guy like Casper Wells right now with the way the offense is going. 348 career on base against lefties, and 838 career OPS against lefties. And I know they like Mark DeRosa for his veteran presence clubhouse type of thing, but I was a little disappointed when they designated Casper Wells for assignment because I thought he would be a great platoon option against left-handed pitching, platooning at DH with Adam Lind. That's all I have for you, Mr. Wilner.
All right, I'll take it. And your points, well, the first one anyway, quite well made. Every team could use more on-base guys. There aren't enough of those guys out there in the big leagues, which is one of the reasons that the major league average on-base percentage has kind of dipped below 330 the last couple of years. I'm a big fan of people who get on base. I think that's the best way to build an offense is, like you said, by not getting out. And sure, they could use some more of those guys, but they're not exactly abundant in the wild, and they're not freely available in general either. So I think as far as that goes, I don't know that we're going to see those sorts of upgrades. Second base is really the only position, well, shortstop now, but there's nothing available at shortstop. But second base is the only position, I think, where you could get a big-time upgrade, and there really aren't that many good offensive second basemen out there either. which is one of the reasons why they were talking about moving Brett Laurie to second and Bautista to third and bringing in another outfielder, which I guess is still on the table, but maybe not so much after Bautista and the back thing. And as far as your second point, Casper Wells, yeah, I mean, Casper Wells's of the world are abundant in the Wild. The one-dimensional lefty killers, they're not that hard to find. And I think Alex Anthopoulos made a commitment at the beginning of this season to Mark DeRosa because he wanted him both for the veteran presence, for the ability to hit lefties a little bit, which has been more than a little bit in the past, but recently a little bit, and for the ability to play multiple positions in the infield. We saw him at second base tonight. Although Bonifacio can do that as well, as can Asturias. I think Alex wants Mark DeRosa here, and we'll see how much that pays off in the long run. There's really no way to measure the things that he wants him to bring. But I was really surprised by the in and out so quickly of Casper Wells, although really there's no spot for him. I would think instead of DeRosa, it would come down to Wells or Rajay Davis. And they like Davis's speed. They like his ability to play the outfield better than Wells, even though he doesn't have the power against lefties. That's what I got for you. The rest of you, we will take in our local hour. We are going to continue the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan until 11 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll check back with a look at what else going on around the major leagues and wrap this thing up. Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Orioles. It is the Honda Postgame Show on the Home Hardware Blue Jays Radio Network. Back here at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, the Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Baltimore Orioles. I'm Mike Wilner, and I'll fill you in on the scoreboard, what else is going on around and about. In the American League East, the Boston Red Sox got thumped badly by the Oakland A's, who snap a four-game losing streak with a 13-0 win called by rain after seven innings. Yankees leading the Tampa Bay Rays 4-2 in the bottom of the ninth with Mariano Rivera on looking for the save. And, of course, here, two American League East teams, the Orioles, beat the Blue Jays 4-3. The series will wrap up tomorrow afternoon. It's the old day game after a night game. Brandon Morrow on the hill for the Jays, looking again for his first win of the year against rookie Josh Stinson, who's being called up from AAA to make the start for the Orioles. We're on at 12:30 Eastern for a 12:35 first pitch. Please join us. Right now, you can stick with the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, or sportsnet590.ca, or Rogers Digital Cable Channel 904, or your radio app. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware, homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership with the Blue Jays Radio Network. 1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Nate McLeod strikes out. That is the fourth strikeout of the night for R.A. Dickey. And it would be the last one. Dickey went six innings, struck out four against five walks. Not his best night as the Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Baltimore Orioles, but he did deserve better than what he got. I mean, the two walks in the second inning certainly didn't help him, but the four singles Dickey gave up in the second inning, in which the Orioles scored all four of their runs, none of them were hit hard. They didn't hit a single ball hard in that second inning and managed to score four runs. There was a infield single, a little soft liner over second base, and two ground balls with eyes. But Blue Jays didn't exactly bail Dickey out either. One swing of the bat, a three-run homer by Edwin Encarnacion, and that was it. Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Baltimore Orioles. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. We're taking your phone calls at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Going to the top of the hour, 11 o'clock Eastern Time, at which point Jeff Sammet will take over, and his first guest will be Miguel Bautista, who is back in the Blue Jays organization with the Buffalo Bisons. But right now we're talking about the guys who are up here with the Toronto Blue Jays. And things are not going well. Matt is in Bakersfield, California, listening on sportsnet590.ca. Matt, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Thanks for having me on again, Mike.
Thanks for calling again.
Well, I just had two comments, and one, I called in because I heard a comment on the radio last night that I wanted to defend you guys there in Toronto. It was about the media, about how a fan said that the Toronto media had geared the Blue Jays up to be better than they were. And I want to say that that wasn't just the Toronto media, like you said. It is the American media as well. I've lived in the States for 10 years, and I haven't heard as much about the Blue Jays as I have this summer than I have in the past 10 years. They don't talk about them at all. But this summer, everyone's talking about the Blue Jays, ESPN, all the American networks. So it's not just the Canadian media. And my second comment is about Brett Laurie. I see him out there, and since he's gotten back, I don't even recognize the guy. Last year, he looked like a UFC fighter, and this year, he looks like David Eckstein. And I haven't seen a ball even sniff the warning track from his bat. So,
you missed his lot of his at bat in the sixth inning today, then, didn't you?
Well, I mean, he might have hit it far, but I mean, how many home runs is he going to hit at this pace? The way he's hitting the ball, it's not just me. I mean, I bet you everybody else who watches the Jays out there can see that the guy looks a lot lighter, and I don't have any confidence in him hitting a home run. It looks like the power's gone, and if his bat doesn't step up, we're going to be talking about him as a John McDonald instead of a 30-30 guy. I mean, I don't see. Last year, I heard the Jays media talking about him being a 30-30 guy. Or maybe even 20 home runs. I can't see that out of that bat. The guy looks so small. He's shrunk in half.
Yeah, no, he hasn't. I mean, he definitely does look thinner this year. And he did in the spring, and he was hitting the ball awfully hard in the spring. What you have to remember about Brett Laurie, first of all, even though he looks thinner than he did last year, the man is still very well-built and very powerful. It may not translate when he's got his shirt on, but he is he's not hurting for muscle or muscle definition, without question. He is smaller than he was last year, but that might just mean he's in better shape than he is last year, and he's a little more flexible. What you also must remember about Brett Laurie is that he's essentially supposed to be starting his season right now. You know, he had the ribcage strain in early March that knocked him out, and the Blue Jays were saying that they figured he would be back for this series in Baltimore. They were hoping to have him back to start this series, which would have been yesterday. So the six games he played prior to yesterday should have been played in the minor leagues, rehabbing, getting that ribcage ready. Now, Jose Reyes gets hurt. Blue Jays can't get any hits. Circumstances change, so they bring him up before he's ready, or before they thought he was ready, and he is 4-for-29 since his return.
And that was because of Jose Reyes, right? Because of his injury, they brought him up early?
Some of it had to do with that, and some of it had to do with the general offensive malaise of the team. They were hoping that he could add a bit of a spark to it. So these
are with his attitude. That guy runs the bases right, like I've never seen.
Yeah, and he plays defense with his hair on fire, too, and does a great job. But these are supposed to be, or at least going into this week, were supposed to be rehab at-bats for Brett Laurie. So I don't think your concerns are that well-founded, to be honest.
So just give him more time and then maybe jump to a conclusion in a month from now?
Well, never jump to a conclusion. It's never good to jump to a conclusion.
Blue Jays did that with Alex Rios, and he went out of town, and well, look at the seasons he's putting together with the White Sox. I mean, maybe does Brett Laurie get a little more leeway because he's our golden Canadian boy?
No. No, he doesn't. And Alex Rios had two awful seasons in a row before the Blue Jays let go of him. And then he went to Chicago and was awful for the rest of that year and the next year.
That's
so
true.
It took him a while, and he was making a ton of money. Don't forget that. Rios got run out of town because he wasn't living up to the contract, and he was killing them. As far as money goes and production in combination with each other, Brett Laurie is not close
to
that.
Is he still out of minor league salary?
No, he's in the major leagues.
Well, I mean, is he still out of low salary? He still hasn't hit arbitration years?
Right. Yes, he still is not going to hit arbitration until after next season. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. But because a guy loses weight doesn't mean a guy's power's gone. And that's a big conclusion to jump to. And again, time. Everything takes time. I know nobody wants anything to take time, but everything takes time. Harris is in Toronto listening on our flagship Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Harris.
Hey, Mike. A few short comments. First, the Leafs and their success have really brought this team another month or so to figure things out. And
well, we'll see about that. We'll see how long the Leafs go. But, yeah, they've definitely bought the team some time.
Yeah, and when that season ends, whenever that will be, people are going to look around and say, hey, how about the Jays? And it's just going to be disappointment that they see, which is too bad for Rogers, too bad for the fans.
So you believe that in a month the Blue Jays will still be doing badly?
No, but I don't believe that, but I believe that they won't be doing as well as people expected them to be doing.
Well, I mean, they've played 21 games, and only if they were 25-0, I think, would they be doing as well as people expected them to do. So, yeah, no matter what, they're not going to be doing as well as a lot of people expected.
Right. And then second, I'd like to see Colby Rasmus in the two spot. And I didn't like Lind up there.
Because he got on base twice in three trips?
Well, that's an oddity from what's been happening in the whole season, actually.
He's leading the team in on-base percentage.
I still like him behind Encarnacion.
Yeah, I think once he starts hitting for power again, I like him in the middle of the order too. But again, the way the Blue Jays offense is going, I'm not going to turn my nose up at any move designed to put runners on ahead of Bautista and Encarnacion. And the truth is that Adam Lind is your best on-base guy on this team right now. And it happened again tonight. He had a leadoff single in the fourth inning, and he worked the two-out walk to help set up the three-run homer. So, I mean, I don't see how you can have an issue with it right now.
But how do you feel about Colby Rasmus up there instead of Lind?
He did a good job for those first 6 weeks last season when they moved him up to the sixth spot. I mean, he was one of the best hitters in the major leagues over that time. Right now, Colby's kind of become a bit of a three true outcome guy, even though he had a double today. It's generally either home run, walk, or strikeout for him, and I don't know that that's terribly well suited to the two spot right now.
All right, and last thing, the one run games. It's how Baltimore reached the playoffs last year, and they just need to find a way to do whatever to win those games.
Yeah, I wish it was that easy. And I know people would like to think that it's possible to just to do something, to win a one-run game, to will yourself into a win in a close game, and that, you know, that there's some character trait that teams that win those close games have, that teams that lose those close games don't have. But it's simply not true. It really isn't. There's nothing you can do to win one-run games other than be one run better than the other guy. It's, you know, have a great closer. The Blue Jays have a great closer. The Orioles were up by four, and they let the Blue Jays back in it, and that's why they won by one instead of winning by four. I don't think that there was any... did you see the Orioles will themselves to win this game because it was a one-run game? You're gone? He's gone. I'm sorry. But I'd like to know that. I mean, last night, too, was it something the Orioles did that made Munenori Kawasaki bounce that throw with two out in the ninth inning? And prior to last night, the Orioles were actually under 500 in one-run games this year. Now they're 4-3. So if someone, I would really like someone to be able to verbalize it to me, what it is that teams that quote-unquote can win close games have that other teams don't have. The Blue Jays, by the way, 2-5 now in one-run games this year. Which means that coming into this series, they and the Orioles were both 2-3 in one-run games this season. Sean in Toronto, you're on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I think I have the answer to that.
Let's have it.
It's not making the minor league mistakes and bad coaching, because that's what the Jays have been sort of.
Where's the bad coaching?
Well, where do you want me to start?
I would like you to start with a fact.
Well, I think Louis Rivera had a really bad game there at third base, holding Rasmus and Cabrera. I think both those guys should have gone.
Melky would have been out by 50 feet.
No. But he wouldn't have been out because the throw was up the baseline.
Right. So then you send everybody there, because you're hoping for a bad throw?
Well, no, because holding him there with two outs means that you're relying on Brent Laurie. Remember the guy that you said should be in the minors?
Yeah. Well, would have been in the minors till this weekend, yes.
Right. So you're relying on him to get Cabrera in. I think you send him there. You got to – the hitting's been bad. You got to make a play, and I think that's where you make it on the base
pass.
Because
that's
you
not
take
making
your
a play. That's you, sending your guy to his death.
But he would have made it, though. The
because throw was, the throw was wild. So by that logic, you send everybody because every throw might be wild, right?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
It kind of is, though.
I think you got to take a chance.
But the chance was the guy's dead unless the guy throws the ball away. That's the chance you're taking. If the ball is not – the second baseman had the ball when Melky Cabrera was at third base. The second baseman had the ball.
Okay, so maybe that's right. Maybe that is the play that I think that you have to make, because if you're not making that choice, then what's happening is you're letting Brett Laurie, who's batting 130, try to get that guy home, and it's not going to happen.
There is just as much of a chance that the pitcher throws a wild pitch that scores that run as the second baseman throws that ball away.
Okay. Okay, regardless, I mean, if he had sent Melky would have scored. That's the bottom line.
And that's not the bottom line at all.
I think he should have sent
That's
Rasmus
not the bottom
well.
Line. It's not. Roger, Rasmus,
what about,
let me look at the Rasmus. The Rasmus play was in the third inning, right on that little looper by Henry Blanco.
It was the Blanco looper,
the little soft liner over second on which Rasmus wasn't going because he had to hold up and wait to see if the ball was going to get caught. And then he took off, and you've got Nick Markakis, who's got a great arm.
Okay.
You can't send him there either. And that's with one out in the top of your lineup coming up.
But then you rely on your hitting and you hit into the double play.
But see,
hold on a second. Yeah.
You're making all these – you're criticizing Luis Rivera using nothing but hindsight.
Well, it's not hindsight, because when Melky was – well, whatever. I was screaming at my TV for him to send Melky.
Right, and that's wonderful that you were screaming at him. He would have been out by 40 feet with a half-decent throw.
But the thing is, I mean, you know, it's not the decision you make every game, you know, throughout the whole season. But I think based on where the hitting is or isn't and whatnot, I think I would have sent those guys. But regardless,
worse time to be running into outs, though, with the offense not going well? Don't you need to treat those opportunities as precious as you possibly can because they come around so rarely?
I don't know. All I'm saying is I think you send those. The other bad coaching decision was Rajay Davis pinch hitting for Lynn. Lynn's on fire, like you said, best base percentage, and you take him out of the lineup for a sack bunt.
Adam Lind is on fire, but he's not on fire against left-handed pitching, and it's a whole different ball game when you're facing lefties. And, you know, all I heard all spring long and all last year and the year before is how terrible Adam Lind is and how he can't hit left-handed pitchers and how, you know, he's abominable. You can't ever let him face a lefty. And because he's going well against a side against which he's strong, it was the same thing with the pinch hitting for Colby a few days ago. It's a whole different game, lefty-lefty, than it is when they're facing right-handed pitching. And I don't blame John Gibbons one bit for preferring to have Rajay Davis against Pedro Strop than to have Adam Lind against Brian Mattis, who is a lefty that absolutely murders left-handed hitters. I appreciate the call. I'm sorry that we disagree. But you can't make coaching decisions in hindsight, and you can't criticize coaches because of what wound up happening when. You know, again, to say Luis Rivera should have sent Melky Cabrera because the throw wound up getting away is to say every coach should send every base runner ever because the throw might get away. Andrew Nye is standing by. He's got an update for us. When he's done, we will have more of the Blue Jays talk, and we will hear a little bit from the skipper, John Gibbons, as we continue. Blue Jays fall to the Baltimore Orioles 4-3. It is the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Here's the 2-2. Swung on and missed. He struck him out. Fastball on the outside corner, 91. Laurie couldn't catch up to it. First out of the fifth inning, one of two strikeouts for Brett Laurie. Tonight he was 0-for-4, made a throwing error. Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Baltimore Orioles, and the way I just said that sounded like it was Brett Lurie's fault. It wasn't. It was the fact that the Blue Jays scored on exactly one swing of the bat tonight. The three-run homer by Edwin Encarnacion with two out in the sixth inning. R.A. Dickey gets nickel and dime to death in the second, and the Orioles don't score outside that inning. In fact, got only two hits outside that inning. And the Blue Jays are 8-13. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And let's get right back to the calls. Paul is in Waterloo listening on our flagship. Well, that's because that's what we're on. We're not on the network anymore. Paul, go ahead. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike, first-time caller.
All right, welcome aboard.
Just got a question. A lot of people are on jumping on the bandwagon or off the bandwagon about Lowry. I think if you realize that he just came off the disabled list, if you give him 50 at-bats, let's talk after that. Most of those people that have started the season playing for the Jays have had roughly about 50 at-bats. And I think he's going to do fine. I think perhaps maybe if you move him down in the order, he might relax a little bit. He's just holding the bat too tight. What's your thoughts on that?
I think he's always going to hold the bat too tight. I mean, that's Brett Lurie's game. He swings hard. He plays hard. He plays with his hair on fire, and that's who he is. But yeah, I agree with you. He needs some at bats. He needs some time. He missed a long, long, long time. And it's, you know, you can't just snap your fingers and get right back.
Another thing, too, about the pitching. Like, I've watched every game since the home opener, and I've noticed, too, that the cycle of a pitching between the third and the fourth inning, every pitcher seems to have a bad inning.
And then, between the third and the fourth inning?
Well, between the second and the fifth inning, it seems to me of the games that they've lost.
Uh-huh.
They've always, the pitchers have always
Please
fallen
don't say always.
Behind, and they, like Dickie did tonight with three runs or four runs, and then the batters are always playing catch up.
Yeah, they have given up the first run a whole big whack of the time this year, for sure.
Now,
in far more games than in which they've scored it.
Now, do you think that that's problematic because their batting isn't coming around?
Uh-huh.
Do they both go hand in hand, or what's
Well, yeah, a lot of it has to do with the hitting. I mean, they've played 21 games, and in 15 of them they've given up the first run.
Yeah.
And you know, there have been some poor first innings, but they haven't all been poor first innings.
No, I agree.
And yeah, and the fact that the offense isn't really doing anything is the much larger part of that.
So what about putting Bonifacio in a leadoff spot? What do you think?
Why? He's been hitting terribly all year.
Well, your batting order. Who's hitting the ball?
Nobody. Nobody. But Bonifacio's hitting it less than most. He's hitting .185. He's got a .237 on base percentage. He's no solution.
You do have to do something.
You do have to do something, but often, you know, just doing something isn't necessarily doing the right thing. I think the bloom is off of the Munenori Kawasaki rose, if you will. He's 0 for his last six. Or, pardon me, no, it's worse than that, I think. Wasn't counting today. But again, he's grinding out at bats, at least. He's seeing a ton of pitches. He's 0 for his last nine with a walk mixed in there. Right now he's the leadoff guy, but you know, you talk about doing something. They did something today. They moved Adam Lind up to second and Cabrera down into fifth and Lurie up to sixth. So it's not like John Gibbons isn't trying to do something. The something that he did today just didn't work. I appreciate the call, and I pass along a roster move for the Blue Jays. We knew that they claimed Aaron Laffey on waivers today, and they have activated him. Laffey will join the team for tomorrow afternoon's game. Ramon Ortiz has been designated for assignment, so the Blue Jays have 10 days to trade, waive, or release him. We'll see what happens there. I can't imagine that there'd be too much call for Ramon Ortiz, and he's likely to just go back down to Buffalo and move into their rotation again. But Aaron Laffey will join the team tomorrow to serve as the long reliever, and the Blue Jays will now have four lefties in the bullpen, with Darren Oliver, Brett Cecil, Aaron Loop, and now Aaron Laffey, who will be the long guy. More of your phone calls in a second. But I spoke to John Gibbons before the game, and I talked to him about the finger-pointing that's been going on, and I saw some of it again on Twitter today. And well, let's listen to my conversation with the skipper. Here's John Gibbons. Gibby on the Twitter and on the Blue Jays talk, with the Blue Jays struggling to hit, some knives are starting to come out from the fans for Chad Mottola, wondering if the hitting coach is the problem. I'm telling them it's on the players, but I want to know what you think, and I think they do too.
Let me tell you, you know, Chad's doing a good job. You know, I know what he's telling these guys and what they're working on, and it's all the right things. The thing about baseball, you know, and sports in general, you know, and the results aren't there. I mean, that's the way the game goes. You know, I've been there, but you know, I'm starting to see a little bit of progress, to be honest with you, and I think we're real close. And I know people are probably tired of hearing that, but you know, we got too many good hitters in our lineup. They're not going to hit at 200. I mean, they've never done it before, so why is that going to happen now? So, you know, the only thing that really is going to change people's minds is, you know, we get on a nice little streak, and then usually things are forgotten. But until then, that's just the way it is.
It's almost the way people perceive things is, if you can't see a reason why it's happening, it's got to be the coaching staff.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's been that way forever, you know. Like I said, I've been victim of that myself, and that's just the nature of the beast. But, you know, he's working hard. He's doing a good job. Right now we're just not getting the results. You know what? We will, though. But, you know, people, like I said, people are tired of hearing about patience. And, you know, I am too a little bit, but we got to be.
They have to be. That's what John Gibbons says. Got to be patient, even though everyone's tired of hearing about it. And it is amazing how many people have said they're sick of hearing that it's early, it's early, it's early, it's early. Meanwhile, it's April 23rd. The only reason you're still hearing that it's early, believe it or not, is because it's early. Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Baltimore Orioles today. They are 8-13 to start the season, and it has been no fun so far. We continue on the Blue Jays talk all the way till 11 o'clock, and we'll give it to Jeff Samet. He'll have Miguel Batista up first. That'll be fun. We go to Jeff in Carrboro, North Carolina.
Yep.
Is that right?
Like,
where's that?
Jason.
Where's Carrboro?
It's in central North Carolina, right near Chapel Hill, where the University of North Carolina is.
I've heard of that. All right, yep. So what's doing down there?
I've been a lifelong Jays fan, and I've just got a few comments that I think help to explain some of the Jays' woes.
All right.
The first is that the Jays hitters have one of the lowest batting averages on balls in play in the league. They're the fourth worst in terms of batting average on balls in play. Meanwhile, the pitching staff is the sixth worst in terms of having their opponents having the highest batting average for balls in play. So I think part of it is just bad luck. Their balls are dropping in, and our batted balls are not. They're finding a glove. So I think that's an important thing to point out. I think that'll even out a little bit more. Secondly, and I know this has been discussed before, the Jays have the worst on-base percentage in the league with runners on base. And they actually, with no runners on, they're about middle of the pack. But with runners on base, they have the worst on-base percentage in the league. I was looking on ESPN today. And then finally, a comment on an individual player. Emilio Bonifacio has 18 strikeouts and 3 walks on the season. He's striking out in about 30% of his at-bats. You know, you just had John Gibbons on, and he was saying that Chad Mottola is saying all the right things. I hope one of those things is telling Emilio Bonifacio, look, I don't care if you hit a single home run all year. I want you to slap at the ball. I want you to take pitches and take walks. I don't care if your slugging average is .350, if your on-base percentage is .352. I just want you to be a thorn in the side of pitchers. Don't help them out at all. Get on base and then let Bautista, Encarnacion, Rasmus do the power hitting.
Yeah, I hope he's telling him to stop faking a bunt on the first pitch of every at-bat so that he gets in an 0-1 hole pretty much every time he's up there. But yeah, your point is well taken, too.
And then when he said that, he's bunting a lot, but when he's swinging away, it looks like he's trying to hit the ball a mile. You know, he just needs to slap at the ball like David Eckstein would, you know?
Hopefully wind up doing it a lot better than David Eckstein did. Yeah, it's been rough. Definitely a rough start to the season for Bonifacio, no question about it. Thanks, Jeff, and appreciate you tuning in all the way down there. But it's been a rough start for everybody. That's what happens when you're 8-13 to begin the season. Sean is in Toronto. Sean, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Thank you very much, Mike. I've got two things. You talked about the bunting, and you know, I know the Jays are struggling, and it just brought to my mind while I was on hold. Why are they bunting so much? Like, it's not just Bonifacio who's always trying to drop the bunt. It's Sterling.
They're not.
Ninth, like he tried to drop a bunt, or he showed bunt on the first pitch with two outs.
Yeah, he did. He did, and though, you know, those are little. They're trying for bunt singles there, which is not always a terrible idea. If you can catch a defense sleeping, I'm actually a big fan of doing that. But they're just not getting them down. And it's not like it's not even that they're bunting into outs. They're just bunting into strikes.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know. It's just I think that if you have a team that you know can hit. And they're not hitting, then the only way that they're going to correct that is if you get them to swing more. And the less swings you give them, the less opportunity they have to find their stroke and to see the ball better. And it just,
I don't understand
why everybody's bunting.
I don't either. And I'm confident that they're doing it on their own. I mean, there was a shot of John Gibbons after Melky Cabrera did it last week, or maybe even the week before. I think it was in Kansas City, where Gibby was yelling, just swing the bat. And that's what they need to be doing. I mean, I'm a big fan of the bunt single, but if you're going to bunt through it and be down 0-1, then just, you know, just work the at-bat.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm a big fan of getting on base and not getting out.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
You know, whatever you can do to make that happen, that's what I love.
Yes.
But the question that I have that I was curious about is Gibby moves Lind up to the two spot because I don't know if these stats are correct, but someone told them to me, and I think they're pretty close. Coming today, he was 5-for-10, 5-for-his-last-10 plus 7 walks or something like that, doing extremely well. The only Blue Jays doing extremely well, so you put him up in the lineup to do well.
Right.
You're coming into the top of the eighth. You've got your leadoff runner aboard.
Yes.
Why are you then substituting the one guy who has demonstrated that in the last, you know, two games or so, and I know it's a really small sample size, but the last two
it's
games
about four or
so,
five right? games, actually.
Sorry, four or five games
yeah.
that he can either hit or get on base. For a guy who then you tell him to bunt to move the runner, which is fine, but with six outs left in the game, why are you giving away an out when you have a guy who has shown that he can get on base?
Not against lefties, he hasn't. And that's the difference. And I'm sure that John Gibbons felt that he was giving away an out just as much by leaving Adam Lind in against Brian Mattis, against whom lefties are 1-for-12 this year, make it 1-for-13 after he struck out Colby Rasmus in the seventh. A lefty killing lefty against Adam Lind, who's a career, under 200 against left-handed pitching. He hasn't faced a lefty all year. That's why. That plain and simple. Is because the matchup with Rajay Davis against Pedro Strop was one that the manager liked better than having Lind against a lefty. And the same argument was made a few last week when Rasmus was pinch hit for against a lefty, saying he'd had a good game and he's hitting well and he's locked in. But just like I said to an earlier caller, lefty-lefty for these guys is a whole different ball game. And right now Adam Lind is having his best success because he's being limited to a platoon role. And I say career under 200, I'm sorry. He's a career 220 hitter against lefties with a 607 OPS. So that's why you take him out there. I was thinking Quick Trigger Finger, but it's not Quick Trigger Finger. It's that we're up against a break, and I'm still talking. So we'll take more of your phone calls on the other side of it. Andrew Nye's got the update coming. One more segment of the Blue Jays Talk coming your way. Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Orioles. It is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Better now, Machado hits a ground ball up the middle by a guy named Kawasaki. The ball just grazes off his glove. Base hit. One run scores. There's a second run scoring, standing up, stopping at second, McLeod. And on one pitch, the Orioles doubled the count to 4-0.
Manny Machado with that ground ball up the middle. And that was the last Orioles run. Came in the second inning. The Blue Jays had 7 innings to recover from it, and they scored on one swing of the bat in the sixth. The 3-run homer by Edwin Encarnacion, and that was it. They lose 4-3 to the Baltimore Orioles. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk, live from Oriole Park at Camden Yards, taking your calls at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Let's go out to Winnipeg. Dave, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike. Thank you. I just want to address that caller who made mention about sending those runners in from second base. The general rule is if that ball's coming into the infield before your runner gets to third, you should probably be holding them up. Is that my interpretation correct on that?
I think everything is touch and go, and that's why you have a coach there and not just like a red or green light that you can program from the dugout. I don't know that there's the general rule to me anyway. The general rule is if you think a guy's going to be destroyed if you send him, you
Which
hold
is what
him.
Both of them would have been.
Yeah, they both would have been out by a ton. A ton. And I understand the willingness to make something happen and, you know, and people thinking that coaches have to try to push their luck when they can. But again, on Melky Cabrera's triple, the second baseman had the ball on the infield dirt when Cabrera hit third. There was no way, and Melky is not a fast base runner. There's no way you send him there.
No, and I just wanted to ask about Colby Rasmus's hitting approach. He seems to be having not terrible at bats, and everything seems to be they start him away, and then try and finish him off inside. It seems to me he's gone away from hitting the ball the other way. Is that by design, or is that just something that's
I think
come
he kind of went away from that last year when he started his whole big hot streak. I'm really still waiting to see who the real Colby Rasmus is. I think in almost 2 years since he's been here, we haven't seen him other than that 6 week period. And in that 6 week period, he was pulling everything of, seen him playing anywhere near the top of his game. So I think, I don't know if anything's by design other than he's just trying his best to get on base.
Well, he's doing a slightly better job of that than he was last year. So if he keeps this up, I think he'll be just fine.
I hope so. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate the call. Rasmus and JP have to really cut down on their strikeouts. They're both on pace for, to obliterate the Major League record. So I don't see how that can possibly keep up, though the power game for both of them has been rather pleasant. Thomas in Toronto. Thomas, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
How's it going, Mike?
All right.
I know. I could not disagree with you more about Melky Cabrera. I mean, I'm looking at I remember vividly Sid Bream, one of the slowest catchers in baseball.
He was actually a first baseman.
Well, that night he was catching.
No.
And, pardon me?
No, he wasn't. But anyway, he has nothing to do with the story.
He was slow.
Yeah, it might have been the slowest base runner in all of baseball. He might have been. Yeah.
Okay. He ran. Yeah. He ran. He was sent from second base.
Yes.
On a
very single to left field.
Single.
No. On a medium depth single against a left fielder with a great arm.
Exactly.
Yep. And you know what?
He was safe.
He was safe.
Throw.
That was a tie game. They weren't down by a run. I guarantee you if the Braves were down by a run, Bream would have been held. But it was a tie game, 2-out, 9th inning. Game 7 of the National League Championship Series. If Sid Bream is thrown out, you go to the 10th, and the game continues.
That throw didn't even look close.
Who? When?
Sid Bream's throw didn't even look close. And
it was a bang-bang play at the plate.
It was to the right of the catcher.
It was safe by, a heartbeat and a half. but we don't need to rehash a play from 22 years ago.
No. Is Melky Cabrera?
Yeah.
In the Jays, in an effort, and I agree with any caller or any reporter, any beat writer says, you know what? Jays need to be more aggressive in that situation.
They need to do stupid stuff that's going to get a guy thrown out.
There's no way for me or you to prove. There's no statistic that would tell me or you that he would definitely have been gunned down at the plate, especially when the throw was offline.
Of course not. But first of all, you have to take the offline throw completely out of the mix, because at the time that the decision has to be made to throw or to send Melky Cabrera, that throw hasn't been made yet. If you ever know that a throw is going to be offline, then you 100% always send the runner. But the problem with things actually happening in real life and not in hindsight is that you don't know what's going to happen with the throw. And you have to anticipate a good throw, because most of the time that's what's going to happen. When an infielder has the ball on the infield and you haven't left third base yet, you never send that runner.
Well, I think a lot of factors change. A lot of things change. There's a lot of different variables change when the Jays are struggling like they are to produce runs. And
yeah, but why would you want to put yourself in a worse situation?
I don't think it's a worse situation. I just think it's being aggressive. And if he's out, it's just like Lowry stealing home plate last year. If he's in there, nobody's complaining. If Melky actually beats the throw, nobody's complaining.
Right, but there's no earthly reason to believe that he would beat the throw.
Okay. My second point was Lind.
Yeah.
I personally thought that move, too, was, as a couple other callers described, a really curious managerial move. I think, like Greg Zahn mentioned on the broadcast at one point, hey, look, continuity is going to get these guys could potentially get these guys to hit. You give Lynn more at-bats with left-handers, it's possible. Guess what? He'll probably knock the ball out of the yard.
Don't say the word probably. I'm with you on it's possible. But probably? At some point, you have to look at a guy's 8-year record, and he hasn't hit lefties at all.
Continuity.
And you know what? It's continuity. I'll tell you. Do you remember which Blue Jays team it was that won the most regular season games in franchise history? You want to venture a guess there or no?
Won the most.
Yeah. What was the winningest team in Blue Jays history as far as regular season games?
It was probably 92.
It was 85. It was a 1985 team that won 99 games.
Okay, and your point is?
And that team ran 4 strict platoons. Well, 3.5. They platooned at catcher with Ernie and Buck. They platooned at third with Rance Mullinix and Garth Orge. They platooned in an outfield corner, I think. Trying to find that. Well, that was before the Fielder and McGriff days. Cecil wasn't a legit platoon. All right, so they platooned at catcher, and they platooned at third, and they platooned at DH. So 3 positions where the Blue Jays played strict platoons. That is to say, the lefties never hit lefties, the righties never hit righties in important situations. They were flipped, whether it was the 5th inning, whether it was the 9th inning, whether it was the 14th inning, they were flipped.
You have to look at your situation. I think you have to look at your lineup. I think you have to look at the circumstance of how the offense is producing. And I think you have to look at the fact that, look, these guys need a win. They're about to lose another series. I think you have to look at all that. And I think you have to ride the guy that's hot in terms of on-base percentage.
I think you have to look at all those things too, Thomas. But I think that you have to look at those things with an eye towards this makes it even more important that I put the best guy in the right situation for there to be success. This makes it even more important that I'm not having guys thrown out when I'm sending them with like a 10% chance that they're going to be safe. So I see the situation the same way you do, but the reaction to the situation between you and me are completely different. I think I want to take as few chances as I possibly can and be as safe as possible, knowing that I have the right people in place, the more desperate I am for a little bit of success. I don't think the Blue Jays being desperate for a win means you have Adam Lind hit against the left-hander in a big situation. I don't think the Blue Jays being desperate for a win means you send Melky Cabrera home from third when the second baseman has the ball on the infield and he's just rounding third base. I think those are big-time mistakes and not, hey, let's be aggressive and try to get a win. There's a difference between, hey, let's be aggressive, and, hey, let's be stupid because this might work. And I think that's the fine line that we're treading. I appreciate the call. I appreciate all the calls. I want to get to R.A. Dickey before we leave. So let's listen to what R.A. Dickey had to say in the wake of his performance. He gave up 4 runs in the second inning, wound up going 6, taking the loss as the Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Orioles.
Well, I'm definitely not 100%, you know. I'm giving everything I can possibly give, but it's just, it's like, you know, it feels like going to battle with a 3-shooter instead of a 6-shooter, you know. I mean, you just don't have what you normally have, and you feel like what you have is good enough to keep your team in it. But it's frustrating because you want to give more.
How would you compare the way you felt today versus the White Sox?
Very similar. You know, and that second inning was a very quirky inning. Not a lot of hard contact. It was a night where I just got baseballed. I mean, that ball down the line, and excuse me, swing to left, a ball just out of the reach of Kawasaki. I mean, there was just a lot of plays that were just a matter of inches. And I'm not real disappointed with that one inning. I don't feel like I pitched poorly. And I certainly gave everything I could and left it out there, and that's all I can do, really. Probably, you know, I can't generate the velocities that I normally can when this condition isn't there, and so release point wise, that requires a different release point. You know, you got to start the ball a little bit higher because there's not as much velocity on it and things like that. But it was, it was moving a fair amount. It's just a little bit different. Operating at lower velocities, there is a difference, but. I'm not used to walking that many guys, and I think that's more of an anomaly than anything.
What kind of difference in that release point is there now with this injury?
Well, it's just, you know, when you throw a ball that's not traveling as fast, it's not going. You've got to start it higher in order to get it to the plate and strike zone. Whereas if I throw a 79-mile-an-hour knuckleball, I can start it a little bit more on plane. But you know, I've done it before. I can continue to do it. It's just I'm trying to get ahead of the condition here, and hopefully next time out, we're going to try some different treatments and see if it works.
Is there any hesitation about making your next start?
No. I mean, you certainly contemplate how can you eradicate what's going on back there. But I mean, I get paid to be on the field, and I take that a lot of pride in that. And, I feel like my team needs me, and if I can be out there, I'm going to be out there.
Did it get worse this time, Emily?
Not worse, but equally. I mean, it was tough there at the end. I'm glad Gibby let me get out of it, but that's all I had.
Is it kind of the same as the Chicago game?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, it hasn't moved location. I mean, it's still that upper back area. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just mean. As the game went on, was it there from pitch one?
You know, we had that long inning in the fifth. We scored some runs. I sat down. We go back out there, and it just takes a little bit longer to warm it up. And all of a sudden, you've walked a guy, and there's guys at first and second. You've got to really make some good pitches. So it's not worse, but it's still there.
From my vantage point, I just couldn't see. Were you in the dugout? Were you coming in here to stay warm?
I come in here, try to stay warm, walk around, keep it moving, you know, the best I can.
All right, with the you talk about pride, getting to 118 pitches and shutting them down after the second inning. Is that something you took pride in?
Well, I want to do everything I can do to give my team a chance to win. Having given up those 4 runs in the second, That's all I could have possibly done. You know, that was my responsibility, was keep it there. And so there's a little bit of satisfaction, sure, but, you know, you don't – moral victories don't count in the win column. And so, you know, we've got to fix what's going on here.
There's R.A. Dickey, and he's right. He got baseballed in the second inning. He gave up four runs, and there wasn't a single ball hit hard. They have to fix what's going on here, and what's going on here is that the Blue Jays are simply not scoring runs. They're not hitting. They got six hits tonight. And coming into tonight's game, they had five hits or fewer in five games. And I didn't count the games in which they had six hits. There were a couple of those, too. So if we want to make it six hits or fewer for the Blue Jays over their first 21 games of the season, that has now happened seven times. Fully a third of the season. Six hits or fewer. Hopefully they do better tomorrow. We're on at 12:30 p.m. Eastern for a 12:35 first pitch. Please join us then. Brandon Morrow against Josh Stinson. Thanks to Tom Young, to Brett Armstrong, to Joe Sicilia, to all of you. See you then.